Oh, yeah, that's
okay, let's get started here. So, okay, so it's my second consecutive class. I'm doing a teaching marathon today. Just filled in for another instructor, and I'm here doing another lecture. But in any case, so let me make a couple of announcements. So you probably have seen that the second lab is out. The second lab is out, due in 2 weeks. Time to start. Don't wait until the last minute. Okay, especially if you haven't done any threads programming, important to start early because writing threaded code is not very easy. Debugging it is even harder. Okay, so do get started. We will provide some help at the discussion section in lectures or during office hours, but in the end, trying to figure out the logic for the code, etc., is something you need to all work on. As was pointed out, you can work in groups of two. Okay, I don't know how many of you grouped up for the first lab, but this one you are more than welcome to. Things get pick up pace from this point on. Okay, things don't get easier. They're going to stay at this level or get harder. So this is a good time to find a person to work with. Okay, so if you can divide and conquer, all the better. Alright, I will discuss the lab at the very end. I guess it was mentioned in some detail yesterday. There were a few questions from what I could tell, so I'm going to spend 5 minutes at the end just reviewing it, seeing if you have questions. It's now up on the web page as well. Okay, so let me start and then we'll come back to the lab. So a quick recap of last time. We did semaphores, and then we continued the discussion and did monitors. Okay, I said monitors are basically this higher level primitive, synchronization primitive, that makes writing multi-threaded code much simpler. Okay, so what monitors are, essentially they are a class where the methods of the class are protected by a global lock. Anytime any thread calls any method of this class, no other thread can call any other method at the same time. So long as you basically declare those methods to be all in Java synchronized or protected by a lock in some other language. Okay? So it's a class, which means it has methods, it has code, all of that is protected by an inbuilt lock. So you, the programmer, don't have to deal with this lock explicitly. By just making the class into a monitor, a lock is created for you and automatically acquired whenever you call any method of this class or this object. Okay, so any time a method is being executed by any thread, everything else blocks, no matter what other method of this class or this object is called. Okay, so that's what is a monitor. And then what I said is if you are within a method and you need to go to sleep for any reason, you use a condition variable. Okay, you say waiting for a certain condition is not true at the moment, so you basically call condition variable wait, that yields the lock and puts this thread to sleep, and some other thread can do something, and when this condition becomes true at some later time, this thread is woken up and the lock is reacquired. Okay, so since what is guaranteed is anytime you are in a method, you hold the lock, so you can relinquish the lock using a condition variable, and when the condition variable exits its wait, your lock is automatically reacquired. That's what, and what I was pointing out is within Java, condition variable is automatically created for you also. But you can have more than one. There's one that is always part of the default monitor. Okay, so that is basically just call wait. But for other ones, you might say condition variable foo, then you would have to call foo dot wait. Okay, so this is basically short form for this dot wait. It's the default condition variable. Okay. So now, as I said, condition variables have three methods. There's a wait, so the methods are very simple, similar to what semaphores are. The names look very similar. Wait gives up the lock, puts the thread to sleep, can notify, basically signals a sleeping thread that it should now wake up. Okay, notify all, wakes up all sleeping threads. Okay, so if 10 threads are asleep, you don't notify all or asleep on this condition variable, do a notify all of them wake up. Okay, that's basically what what you basically have, and then I'll talk about two types of monitor. Okay, so depending on how the condition variable semantics are implemented, you have two types of monitors. One is called MESA monitors, the other one is called HOR monitors. What you have in most systems is basically MESA monitors. Okay, what is actually was used in many textbooks to explain the concept of monitors is also in some toy operating systems is what is called HOR monitors. And the difference is very simple. I will show you on the board. The university is generous. We have a full chalk today. Okay, so this is HOR. This is MESA. Okay, so this is thread 1. This is thread 2. Okay, so we'll say void synchronized foo. Okay, here is thread 2. It is basically here. Okay, it's in the synchronized class. It has done condition variable dot wait, which means it's given up the lock and is asleep. Okay, now here thread 1 comes along. Okay, at some point it does condition variable notify. Okay, in MESA style, what notify does is it wakes up this thread. Okay, so this thread is now woken up. Okay, but it doesn't yet get the lock. It has to contend for the lock. It is just woken up. Okay, because this thread is still holding the lock. It is in the synchronized method. So you will wait. So that thread has been woken up. You will wait for this thread to finish execution of the synchronized method, at which point it will release the lock, and this woken up thread will contend for the lock at that point. Okay, there may be many threads. Some of them may be blocked here on the synchronized method. This one is now basically sitting within the wait. All of them are trying to compete for the lock. And only one thread of these many will get the lock. So in MESA style, notify will actually wake up the thread, but it is not explicitly given the lock at this point. It has to contend for it. It will grab the lock at some later point and then come out of it. Okay, that's basically MESA style. In HOR style, what happens is the same code here. Yes. But as soon as you do notify, you will actually transfer the, wake it up and transfer the lock. Okay, so you are notify not only wakes up a thread, it also transfers the lock immediately to the thread that's been woken up. Okay, so that's the main difference. So here it's a thread that does the signal, keeps the lock and the processor. The waiting thread is woken up, but it waits to grab the lock. Okay. In HOR style, the thread that signal gives up the lock immediately. Okay, and the thread, waiting thread, gets the lock. Okay, when the thread that exits, it releases the lock back to the signaling thread. When this is done, the lock actually comes back. Okay, from the notify. So that's the difference between the two methods. Okay, they are the exact same in terms of kind of semantics of the condition variable, but the only difference between the two is when you are woken up, do you also get the lock immediately, or do you have to contend for the lock and grab it by competing with all other threads? That is the difference. In most cases, you will have to assume this. Okay, this is what is done in real system. We will see why this is a simplification of that. The code is a tad bit simpler if you assume HOR style, but as I said, no real system does it, so you will not write that code. But if you have, I'll show you why it is simple. Okay, so I will. So this is basically the big difference between HOR and MESA style. Okay, so remember that in the previous case of Java, we wrote bounded buffer, and I basically said when you do, here is where you have a while. Okay, so I said that you basically do a while queue is empty, you will do a wait. Okay, notify may wake you up, but since you haven't grabbed the lock immediately, something else may run in the meantime and make the queue empty again. Which is why after you wake up, you have to still check one more time, saying just because I was woken up doesn't mean the condition has become true. Okay, because I may grab that the time between a wake up and me actually getting the lock may be arbitrary. In between, something else may run and make this condition false again. So you have to sit in a while loop and make sure this condition is no longer true before you exit and then remove this item. Otherwise, you will basically come out here, the queue may be empty. So this is HOR style. I'm sorry, this is MESA style. So here is HOR style. the same code, the only difference is the while becomes an if. Okay, yes, question.
How important is it to know the difference? Like, I'm going to have to, are you going to say in a test, like, show the code and run the force out?
Yes, if you are asked to write any pseudocode, first of all, you won't be asked to write detailed code. You might be asked to write pseudocode. In that case, it will be say use monitors of a certain type, MESA or whatever, and you have to decide which how to write the code. The only difference really is whether you put a while or a if here. Okay. Now the question is, why does it become an if in the horse type? Okay, so it depends. Basically, this is the answer is right here. You have to understand how the horse style works, and that will tell you why you only need an if and not a while. Yes?
The waiting thread will run immediately after the item is added to the queue, so you don't need to check.
Exactly right. So what has happened here? This is the remove thread. It's trying to remove an item from the queue. It found that the queue is empty. Saying if the queue is empty, it went to sleep, saying I'm going to sleep until, because the queue is presently empty. Okay, so now here comes your add thread. It's trying to add an item. So it puts an item to the queue and it doesn't notify. Okay. In horse style semantics, notify wakes up this thread and immediately transfers the lock. Okay. So because you have just added an item to the queue and then you woke up this thread and transferred the lock, you are guaranteed that at this point the queue is not empty. Because the very condition that you are waiting for has basically become false, and you immediately grab the lock. Nothing else has run in between. This thread has yielded the lock explicitly to this other thread, so it doesn't need to check again. Okay, it can immediately go and remove the item and return the item. It's because that's guaranteed by the semantics of the monitor. So in MESA style, what happens is when you do a notify, this thread has woken up, but there may be arbitrary number of other threads. Some other thread may have actually also called remove, and it may be blocked here also waiting for the lock. So this other thread C and this thread B will both compete. If C wins, it will actually enter the remove function and it will grab the item that was put in and make the queue empty again. So when B, which was sitting in this condition variable, wakes up, it has to explicitly check is the condition still true, because there is no guarantee what has happened between the time notify was sent and I acquired the lock, because that gap may be arbitrary. In one case, that gap is zero. You wake up, you get the lock, so you are basically, there's nothing else to check. The condition is false. In the other case, the condition at notify time was false, but I was given the lock some later time, so you have to check. Okay, it's important to understand, because if you write code, the code will be different between the two. Okay, is there anything to clarify? So in most cases, so now what might be clear also is that there is no harm in making this if a while. Because what's the worst? You're given the lock immediately, you're checking one more time, it's clearly going to be condition is still false, so you'll exit immediately. Okay? So in other words, code that you write for MESA style, where you're doing more checks, will always work for whole style. But the reverse is not true. If you write a code assuming it was horse style monitors and your library actually gives you MESA style, your code will not work. So the simple thing to do is, if you always use while, you are safe. Doesn't matter what type of monitor it is, it will always work. Okay, because you are in the first one, assume that there's an arbitrary amount of time between wake up and grabbing the lock. The second case, that time has just become zero and it's always zero. So that's a special case of being arbitrary. Right, so that's something to keep in mind. So if you write the code with the while instead of the if, that code will always work regardless of what library, what semantics your library provides you for the monitors, whether it's Hoare or MESA. Okay, so now what I'm going to show you is, so that was Java, which is all you will may ever program in this course, but you do not all languages have this nice benefit where monitors are built into the programming language. Okay, in Java you just add the word synchronized and your class has suddenly turned into a monitor and life is good. Okay, but life is not so good in many other languages. Okay, so we'll see what you have to do in C++ to implement monitors. Okay. So here is basically an exercise that takes an arbitrary C++ class and turns it into a monitor. Okay, but you don't have the benefit of this keyword synchronize. So you have to explicitly do something more to make it a monitor. And what you will see is what have we actually done. Not that much more. What you do is you will basically add a lock. Okay, that's your class. The Q class is add and remove. And you want to turn this into a monitor. So what you do is you add an explicit lock. Then in Java, as soon as you say synchronized, internally the JVM creates a lock for you. In C++, there is no such luxury, so you have to do all the work. So you write a lock, I mean you declare a lock. Okay. And then any method where you added the word synchronized in Java, what you are going to do is you'll basically surround this method with an acquire and a release. Okay. That is essentially what Java is internally doing for you. As soon as you enter the method, it's trying to grab a lock. The synchronized keyword causes you to grab a lock. And then only then you enter. Okay. Here you will explicitly guard this method with a lock and a release. Every method that is synchronized, the first statement should be acquire, and any time, any place you exit should have a release. Okay. This will also ensure the same thing, saying that if there is a thread sitting in remove, it would have acquired this lock. So as a result, if anybody is trying to do add, it will block on the first statement, which is trying to grab the lock. Okay, so you're emulating the behavior of what comes out of the box in Java by explicitly adding locks to protect synchronized methods in C++. Okay, so that only does solves part of the problem for us. What is the other part? What else do you have in a monitor in addition to a lock?
Signal.
Yes, you have a condition variable. So this doesn't allow me to now suddenly give up the lock and go to sleep. Okay, so you still need to implement this condition variable. That doesn't come out of the box either. Okay, so you need to implement that functionality. We will see how to do that. Okay. So if you do these two things, basically you implement a small library routine that does what condition variables do, and you protect each function which would have been synchronized by a lock, you get a monitor. Okay, so you can emulate what Java does without too much more work. Okay, so now I will show you how to do bounded buffer using Horst style condition variables. Okay, so this is our bounded buffer class. So you have append and remove. Okay, so basically a circular buffer of size n. There are two counters you are basically going to maintain, which is basically the last and the number of items in the buffer. I'll draw a picture to show this. There are two condition variables here, full and empty, not one but two. Okay. So you'll basically keep track of where the how many items are there and what the last item is, and I'll draw a picture here. A bounded buffer is size of n. Okay, so that's basically an array of size n, which basically acts as a circular buffer. Okay, so think of this as an array, item 0, 1, 2, this is n minus 2, n minus 1. So there are n items in your array, n slots in your array. Okay, what that is checking is where is the head of the queue and where is the tail of the queue. Okay, that's what those count and last are actually tracking for you. So this, the difference between these two at any point will tell you how many items there are in the buffer. Okay, and when you initialize it, you initialize both to zero. So the difference between them is also zero. So there are zero items in the buffer. Okay, as soon as you add one, you will increment one of them as the count will increment, as you will see. Okay, so what does the append do? Okay, first thing, this is a monitor, so the first thing you have to do is acquire a lock, and the last thing, every time you exit, you do release. Same thing you will do in remove. Okay, so that is a given, we will not worry about that. So what does append do? Append has to check, is the buffer full? If the buffer is full, you have to wait. Okay, that those are the semantics. So you will basically check this variable count. The count equals n. Okay, we will basically say that the buffer is full. So this is tracking how many items there are in the buffer. In that case, you will basically do a wait on the condition variable. Okay? So that's basically what that condition variable does. If the count is not equals n, which means it's strictly less than n, that means there's at least one slot in the buffer. So you will append it to the tail of the buffer, which is tracked by last. You will add that item. You will increment the tail by 1, okay, 1 mod n. Yeah, and you will also increment count, says I just added something to the buffer. Okay, then what I also do is I do a signal on full. Okay, just in case the remove is waiting, and we'll see why that is required. Okay, so you'll have to do a signal saying I at least added one element to the buffer, so if the remove thread is waiting, wake it up. That's what you do here. Okay, this is your remove. Okay, so you again do an acquire and release, and you check is count equal to 0. Count is 0, the queue is empty. Not the queue, the buffer is empty. There's nothing to consume. So you will basically do a wait, saying wait until the buffer becomes non-empty. There's at least one element, so you will wait on the lock. So here, as soon as you added, you did a signal. So if you are waiting here, you will wake up immediately. Okay? And then you just consume. So you will basically take the first one, you will consume, you will decrement the count. Okay? And then you will increment empty. Okay? Because here, you consume something, so at least one slot has been freed up. So if you are blocked there waiting for it to be full, you will wake up. Okay? That's the code. And this is assuming horse time. Okay, why is it assuming horse time? Sorry? Because of the if. Yes, not very complicated. If you had put a while here, this would work for Mesa style. It would of course also work for horse style. But here we have simplified it. We assume that if you come out of this one, this condition will be false. So you will just come out and do this. Otherwise, you would have to write a while here, you would have to write a while there. So that's the only difference. Okay? So as you can see, bounded buffer has become very simple with monitors. So would your lab been if I had asked you to implement it with monitors. Yeah, but you are really going to do it with semaphores. Any questions here? Yes.
Why did we use a circular buffer?
Why did we use a circular buffer? Yes, good question. So, yeah, why do we care? It's a circular buffer. Let me ask that, turn it around, see if somebody has an answer to it.
Is it to avoid running out of the boundaries, or is it for some other reason?
Yeah, so basically, you can add an ellipse. So the answer is very simple, right? So let's assume that the producer runs. Producer goes and fills all these slots. Okay. Consumer will run, and basically consumer will consume the first element, which is here. So the producer has to do a wrap around, because the first element after you filled up to the tail of the buffer is to wrap around, because the consumer is basically emptying the head, the producer is filling the tail. Okay. So you are going to keep basically chasing each other. The consumer is trying to catch up here, and the producer is trying to fill it. So you just keep looping, and what is between here is what is filled. Okay, so this is basically going to fill up, and this is what is being emptied. So you just loop around. So this works always. Okay, all producer consumers that we have seen so far will do that, including the one that you will write for the candy factory. That's how to implement circular buffer. Okay. So all that you need to do is increment your counter and do mod n, and that's all. That basically does the wrap around for you. Okay. So now we will ask a simple question, which is what is the difference between semaphores and monitors? Okay. Semaphores do a signal and a wait. Condition variables within monitors also do a signal and a wait. Okay. So both have exactly the same function, same methods. So the question is there really a difference between a condition variable and a semaphore? Can you actually take a semaphore and use it as a condition variable, or take a condition variable, use it as a semaphore because it does the wait and the signal? What have we learned so far that tells us whether they are equivalent or not equivalent? Yes.
Are condition variables attached to an object?
Condition variables are attached to an object. Absolutely true. Let's, for the discussion, assume that they are decoupled from the object. Okay, so you basically you can say, let's say in Java you can say condition variable foo. Foo supports two methods, wait and notify. Okay. You can also say signal semaphore foo. That semaphore also supports these two equivalent methods, wait and a signal. So the question is, are they interchangeable? In fact, are they the same thing internally? Just given different names, yes.
Semaphores, you have to be more careful with because you can get a deadlock.
Semaphore, you can get a deadlock. We haven't studied enough about condition variables to know if you can get a deadlock. Can we get a deadlock?
Well, you're always in a lock if you're using a condition variable, right? So you couldn't get a deadlock.
Okay, so you couldn't get a deadlock. That's one thing. But there's a reason why. So we look at, yes, you're right. Condition variable can get a deadlock. Semaphores don't get a deadlock. So there must be something different about them, that in one cases you get a deadlock and the other, you're right. The question is, what is it that made us get a deadlock in one case and not in the other? Okay, that's what we really need to understand. There's one other difference. That difference is semaphores can be counting semaphores, can initialize them to n. In a condition variable, as soon as you call wait, you always go to sleep. There is no other semantics there. You call wait, you go to sleep. In semaphores, the wait method actually decrements the value of this integer. Only if it has gone negative does you go to sleep. Otherwise you don't go to sleep. That was the semantics. Right? Okay. So there is a difference in the implementation. That's the first thing you should understand. And then we'll understand what this means. Okay? So there is semaphore.wait. This condition variable dot wait. Okay, this always sleeps, doesn't matter what has happened. Okay, this one you decrement, and if negative, then you sleep. So think of it this as conditional sleep. That wait is not guaranteed to always put you to sleep. You will actually decrement only if that integer has gone negative to sleep. Here it doesn't matter how the state is represented. Wait means sleep and give up the lock. Okay. So what that is also telling you is you cannot do this. Okay, what this is it's a crude attempt to take a semaphore object and turn that into a condition variable object. Okay, so here signal does signal. Okay, wait basically does semaphore dot wait by releasing it. Okay, so this trivial thing that basically says in a wait you release the lock and go to sleep, and when you come out you acquire a lock, is actually not going to work automatically because there are some subtleties here. Okay, and the big thing that sort of what I just said there essentially says condition variables have state, not condition variable, semaphores have state and history. Condition variables don't. Okay, state of a semaphore is the value of the integer it's tracking. Condition variables don't have any such concept. There's no internal variable that's tracking. It's a very simple thing. It says release the lock, go to sleep always. There's no notion of decrement, check something and then go to sleep. You basically always go to sleep. Okay. Here this is a stateful object because there's an integer. The value of that integer represents the state of that semaphore. What has happened in the past actually matters. Okay, that's one important difference. Okay, and we'll see another one, which is in semaphore, so wait and signal are commutative and the other one is not. Okay, so let me show. Okay, so let me explain this one more time. Okay, so here is the example. Okay, I'm going to show two or three snippets of code and we'll analyze this. So here So basically we have two threads. In each case, thread 1 is going to do a wait and thread 2 is going to do a signal. Okay? In one case you have a semaphore that you are doing a wait and signal on, in another case there is a condition variable. Okay, and there is another scenario here. Now, it turns out that for semaphores, the order in which the wait and the signal execute doesn't matter in terms of the end result. Okay. In condition variable, it does matter. Okay. So, in particular, if you basically have a wait in one thread followed by a signal in another thread, the end result is going to be different as compared to if the signal came first, a signal executed first and the wait in the other thread executed next. Okay, so for that we need to understand what happens when you do things in this order. Okay, let's start with this snippet, then we'll look at this, and we'll look at this and this. Okay, so what happens when T1 does condition variable wait? Okay, it goes to sleep. What happens if T2 subsequently does a signal? Wakes it up. Okay, so at the end of this interleaving, T1 is woken up, T2 is not gone to sleep. So T2, both of them are executing. Right? So if you have a wait followed by a signal, the signal wakes up the thread that there is a wait. That's clear. Okay. Now let's do this. Okay, what? So signal came first. Okay? And then the wait came next. So what happens at the end of these two statements? Yes. Yes. T1 is going to run, but T2 did a wait subsequently, so T2 is asleep. Okay? So it should be clear that in this case, the signal, if the signal came after the wait, it will wake this up. Here, the signal basically tried to wake something up, there was nothing asleep, so signal basically didn't do anything. When you do a notify on a condition variable, if there are no threads asleep, then nothing happens. Okay, then subsequently somebody does a wait, you basically go and do whatever you want. Okay, so now let's look at this. Semaphore is initialized 0, not 1. Okay, so you do semaphore wait, what happens to T1? It goes to sleep. Wait will decrement the value became negative, value is negative, you go to sleep. Okay, then T2 comes and does a signal. What happens now? T1 will wake up. This signal will cause this thing to wake up. That's what the semantics are. So at the end of this, T1 is woken up, T2 is also running. Is that clear so far? Okay. So now let's do this. Okay, so now you hear this case is analogous to the signal coming before the wait. So we want to analyze this last case. So what happens to once you do signal here?
Nothing, but S equals negative 1.
Okay. Equals what?
Negative 1, right?
Signal always increments. Okay, wait always decrements, signal always increments. So this signal will cause S0 to become 1. Yeah, T1 doesn't do anything, it just continues execution. Okay, now T2 comes and does a wait. What happens to T2? Nothing. Okay, so in this case T2 basically will decrement this and S becomes 0. It's not negative. So if it's not negative, you continue execution. Okay, so the end of this, T1 executes, T2 executes. So now you can see the difference. Okay, in this case, the signal came first, signal didn't have any effect, and the subsequent wait always puts that thread to sleep. In this case, if the signal came first, it actually updates the state and increments the variable, so subsequent wait doesn't actually block, it merely decrements. Okay, so here the effect of the signal is lost, okay, because it doesn't have any history. This is what I meant by history. This condition variable doesn't check that did somebody do a signal and hence I should not sleep. There is no such concept. Wake means just always sleep. In semaphore, the signal actually updates the state and it's incremented it. So subsequent wait here will actually not sleep. But in this case, because it's zero, it will sleep. Okay, the wait depends on the value of the semaphore. Okay, so that four cases should illustrate why condition variables and semaphores are not identical, but semaphores have state, that semaphores are commutative. Here the order of signal or wait doesn't matter. There's one signal and one wait, the end result is in this case always that both of them will continue at the end of this, regardless of the order in which they happen. Okay? In this case, the order matters. Okay, the one that does the wait will always sleep. The signal comes afterwards, it's woken up. The signal comes before it, there's nothing to wake up. Okay? So that basically should tell you that condition variables are not the same as semaphores. Okay, there is history that they maintain. One is commutative, the other one is not. Commutative means it doesn't matter in the order in which you do them, and the end result is the same. So now we will ask the question, how will you then implement monitors with semaphores? This was our crude attempt to implement condition variables, okay, which didn't work because of that problem. Okay, now we'll try to do something better or smarter. Okay, so this is all initialization. We'll not worry about. So essentially there are two things. There's a lock and there's something called a condition variable, which is an integer here that we will track. Okay, so in condition variable wait, we will basically check how many threads are waiting by incrementing a variable called waiting. Okay, if the count is greater than 0, we will resume a suspended thread. Otherwise, we will allow a new thread into the monitor. Okay, and then we'll do a wait, we'll decrement. So I'll just wait for a second. I'll explain all of this. In signal, basically, what does signal do? Signal has to check if there is anybody waiting. Okay, if that is greater than 0, then you will basically do something and wake them up. If the number of waiters is 0, then signal will not do anything. Okay, which is exactly what you want here. Okay, so this signal, it should check if there is somebody waiting, you wake it up. In this case there is nobody waiting, so signal should basically have no effect at all. Okay, that is essentially what is done by this piece of code. In this condition variable signal, you will actually check, is there a thread waiting? Okay, if the thread is waiting, you are in this scenario, you will explicitly use the semaphore to wake it up. Okay, you will basically do a signal and wake up. If there is nothing even waiting, then you are in this scenario. Then this signal should have no impact whatsoever. Basically, you do that by not doing anything. Okay, you just don't execute the if, the signal doesn't have any impact. This is how you can take a semaphore and emulate what condition variables do. Okay? Yet, although you have state, you will basically do the same thing. So there's the only big difference is here, you took a semaphore and whenever this CV did a signal, you did a signal. In this case, you will basically do a signal only if there are somebody is there a thread waiting. Otherwise, you will basically get into that problem that I mentioned here, which is if you actually increment the variable, then a subsequent wait will not block. In condition variables, you want the wait to block. You don't want this case to occur. That's what you have achieved by doing this. Any questions on this? Technically, this is what all your library would do for you. Okay, so what we are looking at here is if you have the basically a semaphore, how can you write a library that implements condition variables and monitors? And internally, this your library would be doing all of it. As a programmer, you don't worry about all this. Okay, you only worry about what signal does and what condition variable wait does. Okay? But this is the internal implementation of a monitor. Yeah, essentially condition variable part of the monitor. Okay? Your JVM is actually going to do all of that for you. Okay, so now I will switch gears a little bit and talk about two more. So we have a half hour. We're going to talk about two problems. One is called the reader-writer's problem. One is called the dining philosopher's problem. Most likely we will not have enough time to do the dining philosophers, we will only do the reader writers. So the let before I do reader writer, let me motivate what reader writers do. Okay, so let's assume that you have a process or an application with multiple threads. Okay, all these threads are doing an operation on a shared data structure. For simplicity, we'll assume this shared data structure is an shared integer. Okay, so it's an integer I. Okay, just to make this example a little real, let's assume that this is a banking application and the I is basically the balance of your checking account. Okay, so it's a single number, it's a very integer. Okay, for now we'll assume that. And there are multiple threads that are trying to do something with this variable. Some are just reading your bank balance, some other threads might be updating your bank balance. Okay, so if you just go and check the balance using an ATM, that process will just read this value and print it out, saying you have $100 in your account. If you are making a deposit, that deposit thread will go and update the balance, increment it. You do a withdrawal, it will decrement it. Okay. So there are all these types of threads that are doing this operation. So you can classify the threads into two categories. There will be threads that just read the value of this variable but don't modify it. And then there are writer threads that update the value of this variable. Okay, so basically what can you do with a variable? You can read its value or you can modify its value. Okay, if you modify its value, you are a writer thread. If you only read but never change the value, you are a reader thread. Okay? Now you want to do synchronization for this class of threads. Okay? The trivial thing you can do is basically lock acquire read or write, and then you do lock release. Okay, this is how you would normally do synchronization. You say this is a shared data structure, protect it with a lock. Before you read or write, acquire the lock. Then either read the variable or update, and then you release the lock. This ensures that only one of these threads, regardless of whether it's a reader or writer, can do something with this variable at any given time. Okay? This traditional synchronization. Okay? Now, the claim that we will make is that this is too restrictive for this class of application, where there are readers and writers. Okay? Because it basically says that regardless of whether one reader or writer is doing something in a critical section, everyone else is blocked. Okay? Now, why is it too restrictive? So, think of a case where there are two reader threads that are both trying to read the value of this variable but not modify it. Okay? So, if you have two reader threads that are trying to read the value at the same time, because you are protected this by a lock, only one of them will be able to do it at any given time. Maybe thread 1 will grab the lock, read the variable, exit the lock. Then thread 2 will get the lock, read the variable, and exit the lock. Okay, but there is no reason to do that because they are reading and not changing. Okay, in fact, you can let as many reader threads as you want, let them all access the variable all at once without any harm whatsoever. Is that clear? Only when something is modifying the variable do you want real mutual exclusion. If a writer thread is updating, then everyone else should be blocked, regardless of whether they are a reader or a writer. Okay, but if a reader thread is reading, you can allow arbitrary number of other reader threads to all read at the same time. So this will give you more concurrency. Okay, because if you could, of course, just use a lock, but then your serialized access, only one thread works at a time, everybody else is blocked. Okay, in the special case of reader writers, multiple read threads can actually execute in parallel, actually be in the critical section all at the same time without doing any harm. Okay, but if the moment a writer gets into the critical section, everyone else is blocked. Okay, so writers trigger traditional mutual exclusion, readers allow arbitrary parallelism. Okay. So if you now implement a synchronization problem that achieves this property, you have what are called reader-writer synchronization. Okay? So essentially, what you want is, you want to protect the reading or writing of shared data within a critical section. You want to always guarantee mutual exclusion for writers, meaning no one else except that writer, but allow multiple readers to execute in the critical section at the same time. Okay, yes, question.
Can a writer be writing when a reader is reading?
The question is, can a writer be writing and a reader is reading? That is not allowed. The moment if a reader is reading, writers shouldn't be allowed. Only other readers can be allowed. The moment a writer is writing, no one is allowed, whether they are reader or writer. That's real mutual exclusion, that only one writers write at any time. That's modifying the variable, so you shouldn't let anyone else either read it or overwrite or trample on what you are doing. Okay? But reads are harmless, let everyone read all at the same time. Okay, so what are the properties? A reader can allow other readers in while it is reading. It cannot allow a writer in. Okay, because if it lets a writer, then you can't guarantee mutual exclusion. The moment a writer in, everyone else needs to be blocked. Okay, and the writer, once it gets in, should block everyone else. This is called readers writers. Okay. Now it turns out that there is a special kind of a lock that implements this readers writer in a trivial way. So other than implementing a normal lock, which is this, you basically have something called a read-write lock. Okay. I'll talk about this in a little while. In a read-write lock, you can acquire the lock in two modes. You can acquire the lock in read mode, or you can acquire the lock in write mode. You always have to acquire the lock, but there's a mode associated with it. If you acquire the lock in read mode, other threads that are also acquiring the lock in read modes actually get the lock. So multiple threads can hold a read lock at the same time. If you acquire a lock in write mode, then you block everyone else from acquiring the lock, whether it be read or write. Okay? So there is an abstraction called a read-write lock that trivially solves this problem. But we want to understand how you actually implement this equivalent of a read-write lock that guarantees this property. Okay? That is your solution. What's the solution to the reader's writer's problem? We will implement this using a semaphore first. Okay? The way we will do this is as follows. We'll have three things here. One is we'll record the number of concurrent readers in the system, how many read threads that are reading that variable. We will have a binary semaphore called a mutex that just works as a normal lock. Okay? And then we will have a second semaphore called a write, which basically allows you to grab that lock in write mode and prevent everyone else. Okay? So initially, both semaphores are initialized to 1. The number of readers in the system is 0. You never track the number of writers, so that there can be at most one writer at any time. Okay, so that's the write method and this is the read method. The write method is actually very simple. This is a typo here. So write method, what do? You basically grab the write lock. Okay, not the write lock. You grab the write semaphore by doing a wait. Okay, you perform a write and you do a signal. That's equivalent to doing write dot acquire, do a write, and then write dot release. Okay, there's nothing else to do. That write basically blocks that write dot wait blocks everyone else, okay, from entry. So that, and we'll see why it blocks everyone else. Here is the read method. Okay, first you basically grab this mutex semaphore. Okay, you do mutex dot wait, that guarantees mutual exclusion. You increment the number of readers. This is the read method. It's called by a read thread. So you say we have one more reader in the system. If you are the first reader, okay, at this point you must explicitly block all writers because you have already entered the critical section. You can only let readers in at this point, but writers have to wait while the readers are done. Because as soon as the writer ends, there cannot be anyone else. Since the reader is already in, the writer shouldn't be let in. That's what is being done here. The number of you are the first reader, then you explicitly block the writers. So do writer.wait. So if a writer comes along subsequently and does a wait, it will block there. Okay, yes, question.
Isn't that dangerous because if so say we're the first, that I'm the first reader, I enter, I increment my reader's counter, then you come in, you increment the reader's counter, and then I get to the if statement, if reader is equals 1.
Yes.
I won't trigger a wait and neither will you. So isn't that?
No. What's the point you're saying? So you have a mutex. So only one reader can be doing this at any given time. So this is itself protected by a lock.
I see. Yep.
Okay. So you will not have a case that two readers come and do something and got context. So this is a critical section. That's why that lock is there to begin with. Okay. So basically, you just increment the number of readers, you block the writers, and you go a read. So there is no explicit lock on the read. Arbitrary number of readers can do it. All you are doing is you are incrementing the number of readers. Okay, then you again grab the lock, you are done with the read, so decrement the number of readers. If you are the last reader to leave, then you can unblock the writers. If the writer is blocked, you will do a signal and you will basically let any writers continue. Okay, that's essentially what you are going to end up doing. So here what happens is you will, if you are the first reader, you block all the other writers, but readers can come in. You are not doing anything to other readers. They will all come in and do this read all at the same time. And then if you are the last writer or reader to leave, you will have to unblock any writers that may be waiting. Okay? And writers basically grab that lock, okay, to begin with. So it should be clear that this code allows multiple readers. What may not yet be clear is why, if one writer gets in, all readers are blocked. So assume this condition, this scenario, that writer 1 came in and then the first reader came in. So this should be able to get write access and this one should be blocked. Does this code guarantee you that? Because once a writer comes in, everybody should be blocked. Need to start reasoning about semaphores. Otherwise, you'll get no candy. So all you need to do is work through the code. Okay, so let's assume that the writer came in first. What does it do? It does a wait on write. What is the initial value of write? Okay, so we initialize both of those to 1. Okay, so writer, what does it do when it does a wait on that semaphore? It will decrement it. Okay, write will go to 0. It's not yet negative, so writer can go in. Okay, so the writer will basically go and start performing the write. At this point, it should be clear if another writer comes, they cannot do anything. Because if they do a wait, the semaphore will become negative. They will have to block. Okay, so clearly, that writer will block other writers. Now, we will also want that writer to block the readers. Okay, let's see how that happens. Okay, so all that is happening is that writer has come in, it has decremented write, and is doing in the midst of doing that perform write. Okay, and then a reader comes along. Okay, it will grab this mutex. Okay, the mutex is not held by anyone. It will increment the number of readers. Okay, readers will go, you are the first reader, so readers will go to 1. It will check, am I the first reader in the system? Okay? And then you are the first reader, you will actually try to block writers at this point by calling wait. Okay, and what happens as a result of that write dot wait? It's going to become negative. By trying to block that writer, you are yourself blocked because the writer is already there. So you can't explicitly block, but you block yourself. Okay? Because if you are the first reader and there is already a writer, that write semaphore is gone to 0, so this will make it negative and you will be the one that gets blocked. Okay? And when the writer finishes, it will do a signal. That signal will awaken this reader. Okay? Once this reader goes in, it will basically, now since it holds the semaphore, essentially it will block other writers. But other readers can come in. This is basically the logic that causes this to work. Okay, writers block other writers, but writers can also block readers. Okay. Clearly, code is not trivial to understand. You need to spend a little bit of time. Okay, so if you were to implement your own reader-writer locks, this is what you would do. Okay, yes, question. Ah, what's that syntax? Okay, that is C++ syntax. Ignore it, because this is actually C++ code. Assume it is that. Okay, it's basically just calling a wait method on the right. In C++, you put an arrow, in Java, you put a dot. Is that clear? Any questions here? I'm not sure if people have understood exactly what's happening. So what you really want is, I will do some examples in just a moment. What you want is the writer should exclude everyone. The reader should only exclude writers but allow other readers. That's the point we want to make. So we'll basically go through some examples. to see what happens as a result of read and write. So the y-axis here is time is going down that one. So these are threads. So this thread is doing read, this thread is doing the next read in time, and then the writer comes along and tries to do a write. Okay, and we want to understand if you actually called that read method and this write method, these two methods, what happens, who blocks, who gets to run, etc. Okay. So first reader comes in. What should happen to that reader? Does it go and get to do the read, or does it block? Okay, so it will get to read, then it will block. So let's see why it will get to read. So you just execute this code manually. You grab the mutex, there's nothing else in the system, so you will get your mutex, will increment the read count. Read count will go from 0 to 1. You will say, is readers equal to 1? Yes, it is. You have the first reader. You will do write dot wait. Okay? The write semaphore was 1. This wait will make it go to 0. Okay, by doing this, this reader doesn't block because this is not yet negative, but it will now block anyone else who happens to do a wait, including the writers, as we will see. But so write is 0, you will continue. Okay, you will release the lock, you will perform, start performing the read. Okay, so this reader is not blocked. All it has done is decrement this semaphore, increment the read count, and it's just doing read at this point. Okay, then the second reader comes along. Okay, this is read 2. So what does it do? It executes the same code. Okay, this first one is doing this read. So now this one will start execute. The second one executes, you will do a wait. Once mutex, you get the mutex. The previous guy had already released it here. Okay, you increment the readers, reader count goes to 2. Yeah, the first one is still reading. Okay, then you check, is reader equal to 1? It is not, so there is nothing to do here. So it will basically just release the lock and start performing the read. Okay, so it went in and started reading also. So any number of readers can come in. What they will do is each will increment the read count, and then they will not do anything here because the first this condition, if condition is no longer true, and they will all start reading. In this particular case, both of those get to read. Okay. So now we will see what happens when this write executes. Okay, so this writer comes along, does a write. First thing it will do is do write dot wait. Okay, that will decrement the semaphore. What is its value? Assume readers are not yet finished. Yes. So what is it then? Okay, it will be negative 1. The first reader had actually decremented it to 0. This one will make it negative 1 because it's the second wait. Negative 1 means block. Okay, writer is blocked. That's exactly what you want. If the readers are not done, writer should block until the readers are done, because writer should be the only one doing anything. No readers, no writers. Okay. If both of the readers had finished, okay, so you can have a case where this write happens after a long time and those readers have finished, then what happens is slightly different. Okay, so what happens when the reader finishes? Let's say the first reader that was doing the read has finished, it will grab the mutex, it will decrement the read count. The read count was 2, it will go back to 1. It will check, am I the last reader? You are not. Read count is 1, readers is not equal to 0, so it will not do anything and it will exit. Okay? The second reader, which is now the last reader, will come along, it will grab this mutex, it will decrement the read count. Okay, read count has now gone back to 0. So it will check, am I the last reader? You are indeed the last reader. So you will do write dot signal. Okay, this will increment the write semaphore, which was now 0 here. It will go back to being 1. Okay, so now the write semaphore is back to 1. If subsequently, as I said, in this case, if this write has happened much after this point, so both readers are executed, the write count is back, write semaphore is back to 1. Then when that writer comes along, it does a wait. All it does is it decrements the write semaphore from 1 to 0. It actually gets the write lock and it goes in and starts writing, which is what you want because it's the only writer, there's no one else. Okay? So this is basically implementing the readers-writers thing with readers-writers problem with semaphores. Okay? Ideally, you would not do all this. Okay, what you will do is you will declare instead of a lock a read-write lock, and a reader will basically just do read-write lock dot acquire in read mode. A writer will do read-write lock dot acquire in write mode, and that will guarantee you this property. But this is how read-write locks can be implemented to begin with. Okay. Now there is one problem with this solution. Okay, the solution is correct in terms of the readers and writers. Now there is a issue with respect to how readers and writers behave. Yes.
So that if we have, like, say, 10 readers come in and then a writer comes in, we're going to keep allowing new readers in even while that writer is waiting.
Okay.
Where that writer will be given priority.
So what you're saying is, once a reader comes in and you have blocked the writer, you will let an arbitrary number of readers come in. Okay. And if the read count is not, if there is a steady stream of readers coming in, the read count doesn't actually go to zero, then you will starve out the writers. Okay. In particular, in this example, okay, so reader R1 came in, okay, then the first writer came in, then R2, before R1 exists, R2 came in, before R2 exists, R3 came in, before R3 exists, R4 came in. So there is always a non-zero number of readers in the system. So as each reader exits, it checks, am I the last reader? No, someone else has just come in, so I'm not the last reader. So I will never unblock the writer. So this writer is going to just sit there waiting for all the readers to finish, but they are not going to finish because there's a steady stream of them coming in. Okay? So this solution, in other words, can starve out the writers. There are lots of readers coming into the system. Okay? Ideally, what you want is a scenario which says, if this is your scenario, R1, R2, W, R3, R4, the moment this writer comes in, if you want a fair solution, these two should go in concurrently. The moment the reader comes in, it should basically say that I came in before these other guys, so let me do my write before you let these other guys in. But if you just say that because these readers are reading, it's okay to let these two other guys in before they finish, then this will start. Okay, so if fairness dictates that once a writer comes in, then you basically do FCFS. You let a batch of readers, and then you let a writer. And you let another batch of readers, then you let a writer, and so on. Not that you just let readers in all the time, that will starve them out. Okay? So this solution is not fair. It can starve out writers. So now we'll see another solution very quickly. That favors writers. Yeah, the first one actually favored readers. This one favors writers. So how do we read this? Okay, so this one is long, so bear with me just a little. Okay, so here what is happening, let's do the read method first. Okay, so there are some arrows are all dot. Okay, so there are several semaphores here. Okay, the most important one that we care about is the one that tracks, once readers are started reading, is there a pending writer? Okay, so the way you make this solution fair is, once a batch of readers has gone in, you keep track. Has a writer come in? Once a writer comes in, the read-write lock shouldn't let additional readers in, if you want to be fair. You want them to be queued up, let the writer do its job, and then let the whole batch of readers come in. Which basically says, in this case, these two guys get to go in. As soon as this writer comes in, you want these other readers to wait. Let this reader finish, let the write finish, and then you let these readers go. So there is basically that semaphore called write pending, which is going to check that as soon as a writer comes in, it will start blocking all the other readers. It will say that now there is a writer, I shouldn't let an arbitrary number of readers come in and start. I am going to make the readers wait as well as the writers wait. Once all the readers finish, the writer gets to go. Once the writer finishes, then all the other readers that had come in get to go. That's basically the solution. Okay, so there are, I think it's a little complicated in terms of all the semaphores. So what you do is you basically have this write pending, and then there are semaphores that basically can block the readers, which is the read block, and then there is one that blocks the writer called write block. Okay? Write block basically blocks writers, read block can block readers, write pending basically says, is there a writer, so I block everyone until all the readers have finished. Okay? So the first thing that a reader will check is there, before I even let the reader go, is there a writer pending? If there's a writer pending, I just block there. Okay? So in particular, this reader will block right there. okay, because as soon as this writer comes in, it will decrement that semaphore and call all subsequent readers to block, as we'll just see in a moment. Okay, so then what you will do is you will basically do the same thing that you did before. You will increment the number of readers. If you are the first readers, you will block all the writers, and then you will perform your read here. Okay, so you will do the actually perform the read here, and then this is the post condition which says I decrement the number of readers from the last reader, then I unblock the writers. We will talk about these other things in just a moment. Let's go back to the writers. Okay. Writers need to basically block everyone. So there's a write mutex, and here you also check the number of writers. So you say if I am the first writer, I'm going to explicitly block any subsequent readers. That's what is basically being done here. So this will cause these two guys to block, even though the these readers are still reading. The previous case, if these readers are reading, these readers would be let into the system. But by having this statement here, you will basically block those readers. Okay, so and then the post condition is you will basically check if you are the last writer, you will unblock those readers. Okay, so whatever you did here, you will undo that. Okay, so that's basically the meta understanding of the code. You need to go and understand it a little more carefully. Okay, there are a couple of other variables that are being used to do some things. So the basic point here in this solution is more complex. In attempt to be fair, you let a batch of readers, but as soon as one writer comes in, you don't let any other readers proceed, because they may starve this writer out. So as soon as a writer comes, you will block subsequent readers and you will make that writer wait. Okay, so then once these readers finish, this one goes, and once this one finishes, it will basically do this and then unblock these readers. Okay, then as soon as the next writer goes, while these are reading, this will block any subsequent writer. So that's essentially what that solution is doing. Okay, so do go and look at this in little more detail. If you want, I can come back to this and work through these examples. But in the 5 minutes that I have here, I want to just show you the readers writers using Java, which is so much simpler. All this code is very complicated. The way to do this using Java monitors is much simpler and cleaner. This is essentially the code. Okay, so here basically this is your read method. It's not synchronized, which means multiple readers should go in. If you make the read method synchronized, then only one reader will go in. Okay, is that clear? That's equivalent of protecting everything with a lock. So first of all, the read method shouldn't be synchronized. Okay, all you will do here is you will call prepare to read, which is that function. You will do the reading. You will call done to read. Okay. What does prepare to read do? Prepare to read just increments the number of readers, and it basically asks the writer to wait. Okay, so you're saying if there's already a writer, you will wait. If there's no writer, you will basically continue. And then the done reading will decrement the number of readers. If you are the last reader, you will unblock all the writers. That's all it is doing. Okay? So, read method, this thing is just checking. If there's a writer, I block. If there's no writer, I increment and continue. That's all you do. Okay? The thing to note though is that these methods are synchronized. Yes, these methods are protected by a lock, because this is emulating the first solution, in the sense of basically this mutex and this signal is essentially that synchronized method. This mutex and this signal is that done reading synchronized method. So that is the reason those actually have a lock. Okay, so prepare to this and this will be synchronized. And then the writers is very simple. The writer method is itself synchronized. Okay, basically it says once a writer goes in, nobody else gets to go in. Okay, so that's basically a way to do this, is you just protect the whole thing with synchronized, and then you basically are prepared to write, which says if I am the first, I increment the write count. Okay, if there are some readers waiting, then you will basically wait. Okay, you will give up the lock and let the readers finish. Otherwise, you will just continue and do the writing. Okay, that's all it is doing. Okay, so the writer has to at least wait until the readers finish, which is what this will do using condition variables. Is Is that clear? Any questions on this? Yes.
Prepare to write and done writing, it doesn't matter that they're synchronized, right? Just because
yes. So you
should only call the synchronized method.
If you are calling some other methods within a synchronized method, those methods shouldn't be synchronized. That's a rule of writing in Java. Okay, so here, that's a good point that you raised. So if you do this, okay, so if you have void synchronized foo, within foo you call bar, and if you have void synchronized bar, okay, so if you call one synchronized method from another, okay, you will get a deadlock. Okay, so you should never do this. If you have a synchronized method should never call another synchronized method. Because what is a synchronized method doing? Internally, before you start executing the synchronized method, the JVM tries to call acquire your lock. Okay? If foo is executing, the thread already holds the lock. Because it's already internally done a lock acquire here. Now if you call bar and try to do another lock acquire, this thread will block. Because the thread already holds the lock. If it tries to acquire the lock again, that's incorrect usage of the lock. Because the thread will block forever. But it holds the lock, it's trying to acquire it again, and if the lock is in use, it will be blocked. Okay? So this, as a standard rule in Java, independent of the solution, you should never do. Once you are in a synchronized method, you should never call another synchronized method. Yeah, because if you hold a lock, there's no point trying to acquire it again. Yeah, that's essentially what happens. So, as a result, within this synchronized method, all of these are already critical section. That is part of the critical section because you are already holding the lock. So you shouldn't put synchronized there. Okay. Now contrast that with here. Here these two things are synchronized, but here there is no synchronized. So this is okay. Okay, because you didn't hold the lock in this method, but when you do this, you do try to get the lock, okay, because you are trying to yield it and so on. Okay? Something to keep in mind because it can trip you over. Okay? If you call one synchronized method from another, you will get what is called a deadlock. Your code will not continue beyond that point, just hangs. Okay? So what I would suggest is that you look at this reader's writer's problem one more time. The next time when we start, I'm going to at least do one of these exercises so you understand how this code works before we move on. Okay, I'm not sure that the subtleties are all clear, so we will revisit this before we continue. Okay? So for today we will stop here. I ran out of time. I wanted to say something about the lab. Okay, so just for those of you who came late, the lab is already out. It is basically asking you to write, give me just 1 minute. The lab is already out. It's asking you to implement a bounded buffer producer consumer problem using Java threads. Okay? So the code for producers and consumers and semaphores, you can't use monitors for this. You have to use semaphores. You have to use the semaphore class in Java specifically. The code for that I already put up last time. Okay, so you have to blindly go and use that code. Don't have to think how to do it. So I'll show you where the code is. So this is essentially the code for producers and consumers. Okay? So you will need 3 semaphores. So just use these 3 semaphores in Java, and that's the pseudocode. That's all you really need to do. From a synchronization, so you need to first create the threads, of course, but once you have done that, the semaphore code is all here. So this is what you should use, and then implement your lab using this as the template for your program. Okay, so the first level of how to write a semaphore code is not even going to be an issue because most of it is already spelled out here. Okay, otherwise you would actually have to think about how to do the synchronization. Okay, in this case you have already been given. I'm pretty sure nevertheless you will trip yourself up if you have not done synchronization and threads. Okay, but this is the starting point for your lab. Okay? So we will discuss it again next time. But I do encourage you to at least look at it and get some start so we can discuss it in more detail. Okay, so let's stop there. Sorry,